Hello, and welcome to Star Trek Panel to Panel. This is Jeremy Bement, your host, welcoming you to another jam-packed episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel. I hope you've been enjoying these episodes, or if you're new to Star Trek Panel to Panel, welcome aboard. This podcast covers all things Star Trek comics. In every episode, we take a look at a collected edition of Star Trek from the Eagle Moss or Hero Collector collection. This time around, we're going to take a look at Early Voyages Part 1, which is Volume 9 in the Hero Collector line. And in this episode, we'll start out by taking a look at the most recent Star Trek comic news, and then we'll take a look at this fine volume of Star Trek comics that was released by Marvel Comics back in the early mid-90s. And then we'll have a chat with one of the artists, not on this particular volume, but someone who drew many of the issues in the Star Trek Early Voyages line, artist Mike Collins, or comic creator Mike Collins, or just creator Mike Collins, because he does an awful lot of stuff. But we'll have a nice chat with Mike about his work on Star Trek comics, and we'll see what it was like working for Marvel Comics back in the 90s. I hope you enjoy this episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel, and without any further ado, let's just jump into this episode. With every new episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel, I have a little blurb in this particular part of the episode to tell you about Hero Collector and the Star Trek graphic novel collection that they come out with. This is how I am keeping up on my Star Trek comics and giving you an episode, basically an episode for every volume or a volume of the Hero Collector line. And like I said in the intro, the one we're going to cover this time around is Star Trek Volume 9, which is Star Trek The Early Voyages Part 1. Hero Collector, they have the rights to reprint all the Star Trek comics that have ever been made, from the 60s through present day. And they put them out in these really nice, really high-quality hardcover graphic novels. And if you're a Star Trek fan and you're trying to read all the Star Trek comics, this is probably the easiest way to find all the Star Trek comics compared to trying to find the individual issues. It's really tough if you go hunting for back issues. You can probably find quite a few of them really, really cheap, but there's a lot of really hard-to-get ones. And if you want to have a nice collection to put on your bookshelf, make sure you go to Hero Collector, which is at herocollector.com. You can sign up for their subscription service, and they'll start sending out volumes of the graphic novels to you. And it's rather nice. I get a couple of them every month, and I've been going through and reading them, which I really enjoy. And they do a nice job of giving you a wide variety. You might get a classic Star Trek volume 1 month, and the next month you might get a Next Generation story. You might get a mini-series from IDW 1 month, and some issues from DC Comics run way back in the day is another volume. They're not stopping on these volumes. In fact, if I just pulled up the Hero Collector website, and if you go to their articles section, they have an article from Rich Hanley, who is the editor-in-chief of their graphic novel line, and they just announced the newest volumes that will be coming out, volumes 125 to 128. Volume 125 is going to be the Ashes of Eden reprint, which is the William Shatner novel that was turned into a graphic novel. That's what volume 125 is going to be. 126 is going to be a story called N Vector, which is a DS9 story that Wildstorm Comics came out with after the in the pocket novels when they were going to kind of give Deep Space Nine a reboot in the book series. This was the comic series that was going to kind of go along with that. Volume 127 is going to be the 5-issue miniseries from IDW called Klingons Blood Will Tell. It was the second miniseries that IDW put out, and it focused on Klingons, which is something different. So see, you get a nice variety of stuff, like I was saying. And volume 128 is going to be a story called Cry Vengeance, which is a Star Trek Next Generation story that DC Comics put out from writer Michael Jan Friedman, telling a story with Jean-Luc and company. It was, I guess it collects Next Generation specials numbers 1 through 3 that had stories from Diane Duane, Tony Isabella, Kevin J. Ryan, and Chris Claremont. So, Hero Collector is continuing to put out these wonderful graphic novels. I'm just now starting my way through these. Like I said, I'm getting these on a regular basis, and I'm putting out these episodes of Star Trek Panel to Panel to kind of review these books as they come out, and I think you'll enjoy this podcast if you are new to this podcast. And like I said, if you want a really good way to get back issues of Star Trek all in one place, all looking nice, with hardcover books with matching spines, you're not going to find a better way to do it than going to HeroCollector.com. So make sure you check out their website, make sure you subscribe to their graphic novel service, and not only that, they have other stuff available too. You can collect all the Star Trek ships. They're doing model replicas of all the Star Trek ships that you can ever think of. There's various different things they're doing, WWE wrestlers, just limitless things that you can sign up for and subscribe to at HeroCollector.com. Make sure and check them out.
Incoming transmission.
In Star Trek comic news for this episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel, I just wanted to let you know that according to my calendar, this coming Wednesday, as I'm recording this news, on this coming Wednesday, July 15th, the first issue of IDW's Deep Space Nine Too Long a Sacrifice miniseries will be coming out. So make sure that if you want to get your Star Trek comic fix as quickly as you possibly can, go to the local comic book store of your choice and pick up Too Long a Sacrifice. It looks really good. In fact, if you want to see a preview of it, you can go to, I believe it's just StarTrek.com, I think has a really good preview on there. But check it out that way, and if you find it really interesting, make sure you go to your local comic book store. In other comic news, I kind of already covered that when I talked about Hero Collector and their website. They announced the newest four volumes that they will be releasing in their Star Trek graphic novel line, which I just told you about. So if you haven't signed up yet and haven't subscribed, I highly recommend it if you're a Star Trek comics fan and are trying to collect all the Star Trek comics. The easiest way is to get these nice hardcover books. I'm a sucker for a collected edition on my shelf. I would much rather go to my bookshelf and pull off a collected edition of something I want to read than try to find back issues and hunt through boxes and keep them all organized. And I've reached a point in my comic collecting where I'm not worried about monetary investments and buying stuff that I think is going to go up in value or first appearances of characters or things like that. I just want the story. I want to enjoy it and sit down and read it and put it back on the shelf when I'm done. So make sure you go to HeroCollector.com and sign up for that. And they show no signs of stopping. If they're up to 128 volumes of Star Trek, that's quite a bit, and they still got more to put out. So make sure you sign up. Other than that, it's been rather quiet on Star Trek comic news. So let's go into more of this episode.
Accessing library computer data.
Star Trek Early Voyages Part 1 is the volume of Hero Collector's Star Trek graphic novel collection we're going to be reviewing on this episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel. These issues came out in, I believe it was the early 90s, and it doesn't really have a date in here that tells you when, but it's really interesting stuff. It was written by Ian Edgington and Dan Abnett, with art by Patrick Zercher, and other artists in this run, the Early Voyages run, were Michael Collins and Javier Pulido. All this artwork, I believe, from all three of these gentlemen is very early stuff in their career. The Volume 1 stuff, it reprints the first six issues of Early Voyages, and it's all Patrick Zercher art, which is some really nice stuff. But let me start out first by talking about the story. And back in this time, Marvel Comics had the rights to do Star Trek comics, and they wanted to kind of branch out a little bit, and they realized that there's been a ton of Captain Kirk stories that have been told over the years, but not all that many stories about the crew before Kirk took over the Enterprise with Captain Pike, which of course we saw in the pilot episode of Star Trek and also The Menagerie. And so it was kind of a neat novel idea to do an ongoing series with a young Spock and a female number one that on the show was played by Majel Barrett, of course. These issues were just stories that they could tell, showing the original crew of the Enterprise and showing the precursor to the five-year mission with Captain Pike's five-year mission. I thought this, just these first six issues, was very interesting in that they do a nice job of establishing a cast of characters and getting a little bit of a backstory for each one of them. And not only that, but they kind of give you some underlying problems or things about these characters that you find out, especially as you read this graphic novel in these first six issues. They do a nice presentation. There's a two-page spread where Pike is kind of going over the personnel files for these characters, which I thought was neat. You get to learn about Lieutenant Jose Tyler, who served under Captain April on the Tiberius and then went on to the Enterprise. The head nurse, Gabrielle Carlotti. Lieutenant Sita Mohindas of the Delphi city-state. There's also an alien called Nano, the only emissary ever sent from the Lyran culture. So it's interesting to see that they included like an alien who doesn't look like anything that they probably would have been able to put on the show back in the 60s. There's also a transporter chief, Nils Pitcairn, Starfleet career man, and they also included an American Indian, chief engineer, moves with burning grace. So you get some interesting characters, and you get to learn more about them as Pike learns more about them in this series. The stories themselves, they have some really nice adventures. It's the stories that Abnett and Ian Edgington are telling. They definitely have a classic Star Trek feel to them, at least in my opinion. They move along at a pretty quick pace. They have a good feel to them, and I thought it fit well with the area that they're trying to tell a story in. Patrick Zercher's artwork, you'll hear when I talk to artist Mike Collins here coming up, Zercher's art definitely fits the feel of what Marvel Comics was putting out in the 90s. These characters on board the Enterprise all look very majestic and heroic and stoic and look more like superheroes than they do just what the actors would look like or an actor would look like playing a character on a Star Trek series from the 60s. The art style that Zercher is using here very much is influenced by what Marvel Comics was putting out in the 90s. Lots of lines, lots of shading, lots of dynamic poses and super hero type poses to people. You can see as you read this book and when you get up to issues 5 and 6, they kind of get away from that a little bit, which to me was a nice change. I'm not sure if it's so much Zercher being able to develop his style and try to tone it down more and make it look more like a TV show or a classic Star Trek show, or if it's just Marvel kind of loosening those restraints a little bit and the changing of the times where they're kind of easing up that superhero look. Whatever the case, I think when you get to the issues 5 and 6, you can see a marked change in the artwork, and I think it's a change for the better. It looks more like a Star Trek story than a superhero story with characters in Star Trek uniforms. All in all, I thought this was a good, a nice run, a good intro story for Captain Pike and these characters. I'm kind of curious to see if any of these characters, I know there's a couple characters here that were the ones that were on the TV show, but there's also new ones that they created, and I'm curious to see if like the books carried on with any of these characters or any other comic stories carried on with these characters to see what happened to them. I'm also interested to see the other two volumes of the early Voyages to see what happens to these characters down the road as this series progressed. So I think it's a good volume. If you're interested in Captain Pike, which a lot of people are now with the Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access and the fact that we are going to get a Pike TV show, it's interesting to see how other people interpreted the character of Pike and what he was, how he was interpreted back in the 90s compared to how he's been interpreted on Discovery. So I think you'll enjoy this. Make sure and check it out. Artist Mike Collins has been drawing comic books for going on 30 years now. I guess if you start thinking about when he first started back in the 90s, he's done work for all the major comic companies. He's probably best known to for comic fans as the gentleman who penciled Uncanny X-Men number 266, the very first appearance of Gambit. But he has done Star Trek comics, and that's why we're chatting with him today. He was one of the artists on the Star Trek Early Voyages comic from Marvel Comics back when they had the rights for the second time that they acquired the Star Trek rights back in the 90s. And Mike and I had an excellent conversation. In fact, we just kind of dove right in talking about Star Trek comics and his work on them. And in fact, he'll give you a little teaser about one of the upcoming volumes from Hero Collector, The Untold Voyages. And that's where we're going to start this conversation. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mike Collins.
Oh, sure. Well, actually, the Untold Voyages is coming up in a very imminent volume.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, because the nice thing about that comic is it explains the link between Star Trek, the motion picture, and Wrath of Khan. It fills in that gap.
Oh, okay.
So it's a great little story. And you need to get Glenn Greenberg, because he wrote that. Get him talking. He's a raconteur.
Okay, I'll have to do that. I'll have to track him down.
Oh, sure. Well, he's a Facebook friend, and he's easily accessible. Yeah, he's a good guy and really good writer.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Well, yeah. Let's talk about the early voyages. Well, actually, I want to talk about how these comics took place, or these comics were made back in, what was it, the early 90s?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Or early to mid-90s, somewhere in there. And at that point in time, were you just working exclusively for Marvel?
No, I'd been working for DC. I'd been working for 2000 E over here in the UK. Odd bits and pieces for Doctor Who magazine as well.
Sure.
As ever, but because Doctor Who never gets far away from me.
Yeah.
But the Star Trek thing, how did that come about? I've been doing a bit of work for DC on their Star Trek books.
Okay.
In fact, at one point, I was going to be writing and drawing a whole chunk of stuff, and then they lost the license. Okay. As these things happened various times through the 90s, where Marvel and DC just swapped through on the license and what have you.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I know Star Trek seemed to really jump around quite a bit.
Yeah, it's I think the only thing that ever came out from me for DC of Star Trek, funnily enough, was another linking strip. I wrote and drew a piece which bridged the Search for Spock with Voyage Home.
Oh, okay.
So it's all set on Vulcan, and the whole point of the story is by the time we get to Voyage Home, Spock has basically re-educated himself into who Spock is.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really interesting period to deal with the fact that one of the central characters in your show has no idea who he is. And he's on his home planet, and it's basically him re-experiencing his life when you've got various other characters from the franchise just sort of hanging out on Vulcan because they've got nothing else to do. Uh-huh. So it was a fun little piece to write and draw.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Now, and, have you always been a Star Trek fan?
Oh, yeah. One of the weird things for me about Star Trek is that in Britain, we have this tradition of weekly comics that do a lot of licensed material.
Sure.
And the biggest one for me growing up was a comic called TV21, which featured a lot of the Gerry Anders and stuff.
Yeah.
So, Stingray and Fireball XL5 and Captain Scarlet and all that stuff. And they didn't just do the Gerry Anders stuff. They sort of diversified. And in 1969, when I was like 7 or 8 years old, they started running this comic strip called Star Trek. And then a few weeks later, the BBC showed a show called Star Trek. And in my little head, Star Trek was just like Batman. Uh-huh. Was a comic strip that got turned into a TV show.
Sure.
And that just stuck with me. So So when I draw Star Trek comics, I'm taking it home.
That's cool. So when you worked on the early Voyages issues with Captain Pike, they had done quite a few issues before you got on board.
Sure.
Was it interesting to you, being a Star Trek fan, to be able to kind of help create some of these untold stories of Captain Pike and the crew of the Enterprise before all the stories that we're familiar with?
Oh, absolutely. I always felt it was an under-resourced period in Star Trek history, and I love the fact we're now actually going to get a Pike TV show.
Oh, yeah, that, me too.
For me, it's just like brilliant. And Anson Mount, oh my God, Anson Mount. I mean, talk about hit the ground running as an actor and a character. Uh-huh. He was there from the first minute. I mean, when he steps on that bridge, you go, yeah, I want to know more about this guy. I like this guy. And so, yeah, getting to do the comic was lovely, getting to fill in some of that material. And what I thought that Ian and Dan did with the scripts was really sort of, without being too sort of fanboyish and fan service, linking up bits of the continuity from various shows and from various bits of, you know, Who lore, yeah, and making it work and sort of giving us a whole world. I mean, a lot of the stuff they did was original characters, but the background, you felt that this was part of the bigger Star Trek universe. You recognize this as being Star Trek. And I love that. And I mean, Pat Zerka did a great job on his books on that. I loved it. And so when I was given the chance to sort of, I think basically to get him ahead on schedule, I jumped at it because, yeah, fantastic. Yeah, to draw young, angry Spock was great.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Spock in his more formative years, that kind of like not quite the Spock that we're used to.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, the thing is, it's a completely unexplored area. So it was ripe for the picking.
Yeah, and one of the things I enjoyed about these were, I think Dan and Ian, like you said, did a really good job of telling some stories that definitely felt like Star Trek stories and touched on bits of history and ideas from various different shows and whatnot that brought it all together and made it feel like a nice treasured missing piece of Star Trek lore.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly it. Yeah. They did a great job on it.
Now, when these issues were coming out in the 90s, one of the things I noticed, at least starting off looking at some of the earlier issues that Patrick Zercher did the artwork on, the artwork to me, his artwork feels kind of 90-ish. It almost felt like the original look of the characters in the story felt more like superheroes. The men looked a little more muscular, and the females looked more like the artwork that I'm familiar with from the 90s from superhero comics. Now, did you draw in that, have that kind of feel, or did you try to get more into just like a traditional, not so superhero look to them?
Well, this is an interesting point, and it might just be me, or it might be something I observed, and it's true, but I just go with it, is that the difference between doing Star Trek for DC and doing Star Trek for Marvel, DC Star Trek comics are a Star Trek comic that happens to be coming out from DC,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Marvel Star Trek comics, Marvel comics about Star Trek.
Okay.
So you're approaching it philosophically differently. This is a Marvel comic that happens to be Star Trek. And that changes the dynamic of the book. So I think, yeah, what Patrick was doing was giving it a certain sort of Marvel weight.
Yeah.
Whereas like a DC, it's almost like this is Star Trek that happens to come out from DC. It's not a DC book. Mm-hmm. So that there wasn't that sense of identity to it. But yeah, Marvel certainly had that. I mean, for my part, I try to keep the actors looking as realistic as possible, because obviously, you know, from my Doctor Who background, that's one of my big things is getting likenesses and making you feel like these are the characters you've seen on the shows. So, I mean, there's a lot of Marvel. There's always been a lot of Marvel in my stuff. They would say that John Buscema is basically my spirit animal. in the way I approach stuff. As we're talking, I'm sketching and I'm looking at the figure and I'm going, I'm drawing a Jumper Cinema figure. As I'm saying it. So there's that to it as well. So yeah, it's that, the whole Marvel feel. It's not a criticism of the way we did it. It's just, it happens to be the fact we were doing a Marvel comic that happened to be about Star Trek.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That influences it. Yeah,
yeah. When you were doing the early Voyages, or even the more recent, like the Untold Voyages, do you feel like the Star Trek comics are separate from the TV show? Do you feel like you're actually kind of adding to the continuity of all the different Star Trek shows?
You've got to approach it as though you are playing with the toys. You're using the tools that you've been given to tell a story. You're not, it sounds daft, I'm not saying that you're not telling your own story, but you're telling something that's part of a bigger story. There's things you want to enrich. There's things you want to point out. Like, get back to the DC book I did. And one of the things that always bugged me was that by the time of Voyage Home, you've got McCoy and Scotty as like best buddies.
Yeah.
You go and watch the original TV show, and apart from like odd moments, I think in Tholey and Webb, they happen to talk. And I think that might be one of the very few occasions where there's a scene with just the two of them.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, they're separate. So part of my story in my thing for DC was, how did these two guys get to be best friends? And it's basically that you find out that in my story that Scotty works out how to build a still on Vulcan, and suddenly Bones is his best mate.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. It's that sort of thing. And so we're writing Doctor Who stories as well. You want to be telling something that's part of the bigger story. So things, well, you know, stories you can see that work in that world.
Yeah, and I know your artwork from Star Trek and from Doctor Who and various different things. You seem to do a lot of like media tie-in type stuff, and you do a lot of likenesses and that stuff in your artwork. Was it tough in the early Voyages ones to capture the likenesses of like Jeffrey Hunter and the kind of the small handful of people that we saw from the pilot episode of Star Trek into the early Voyages?
Yeah, because there's so little material. I mean, I've got, and I bought at the time when they came out, the Star Trek photo novels. So okay. I had those as reference, but that was pretty much it. Like now you've got the internet and you've got hundreds of things out there.
Yeah.
But back then you were always scrambling for stuff you could use for reference. I think as well with getting Jeffrey Hunter right was there's almost like a generalized look you needed to go for with that character.
Yeah.
Because it's very, you know, most of the time when he was on screen, he was just like staring into the middle distance.
Yeah.
Which is great, but in a comic book, you need a little bit more life. So, yeah. You use that as your starting point.
Yeah. Do you feel that it's important in a Star Trek comic or a Doctor Who comic to get the likenesses down fairly close so that people feel like they're, for lack of a better term, watching an episode of Star Trek? Or do you feel like as long as you get somewhat close and kind of get the general likeness of that, you're okay?
I like to try to get it as close as I can. And the advantage we have these days where, the episodes are available digitally almost immediately, TV shows, that you can go through and do screen grabs. So I've got like whole folders on my computer of screen grabs of all the actors on, like on Doctor Who, for instance.
Yeah.
The current TARDIS crew, I've got loads of shots of them from different angles, loads of shots from different expressions of the faces. But the way I work is that I'll sketch out my pages, I'll work out the storytelling, I'll work out the design, I'll work out the pantomime of their physical appearance, and then I'll find a bit of reference that matches what I've designed.
Okay.
So it as opposed to being a slave to reference, which is the real danger. Because if you've only got, there used to be a British comic called Lookin, which dealt with a lot of TV tie-ins. And the guys that drew those things on, say, Kung Fu or The Bionic Woman, they'd have like three or four photographs they could use the actors. And if you looked at the comic strip, most of the likenesses were a bit wide of the mark, but there'd be like one frame on one page, which was immaculate.
Yeah.
And you were like, that was their photo ref for that week.
Uh-huh. Yep. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed the work that you did on the early voyages, but like I said, that was quite some time ago. What are you currently working on? I know you're always busy doing something.
My TV stuff has sort of obviously slowed down because of our current circumstances, but fingers crossed it's all going to start up again. But there's a couple of TV shows I'm working on, which are NDA'd, so I can't talk about them. It's like, I've got these great projects that you'll find about next year. But the thing I'm actually drawing at this moment as we speak is a little strip for 2000 AD.
Oh, awesome.
Because during lockdown, when I didn't have the gritty adult shows I've been working on, I got invited to storyboard for a preschool show. So I spent like 3 months working on a show for like 4 or 5 year olds or even younger. So It's very, very sweet, very open, very straightforward. And so I'm now drawing a strip for 2000 AD, which is grim and gritty and miserable and nihilistic, and it's great.
kind of polar opposites there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It couldn't be further away. So, yeah. And just hopefully in the next few months, things like Doctor Who will start up again. I'll be back storyboarding on that. So, But this is quite fun. I mean, comics are still my first love, and getting to draw. And this strip I've sort of helped co-plot as well. So there's various things I wanted to draw, and the writer said, give me a list of things you want to draw. I gave him the list. We worked out a plot. He's written it, and I'm having a ball drawing it.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Is most of the stuff that you do now, the majority of your work now doing storyboards and with a little bit of comics thrown in here and there?
Yeah. I mean, that's how that's worked out great for me is that storyboarding is fantastic. I love working with TV because it's drawing comics where they make it come to life. Straight away, amazing. So if I draw Daleks in a certain position, they go and stage those Daleks on the set just as I've drawn them. Mm-hmm. And that's a joy my 7-year-old self couldn't believe could ever happen. I still do a lot of comic stuff. When I can, I fit it around. Like this is a 3-part for 2008, and I've had quite a few months to work on it. So that's been fun, so I can dip into this. One of the big things I did last year, which is coming out in the next couple of months for British humor. I don't know how much you know about British humor comics.
I know a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, the Beano and the Dandy.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I've been drawing Desperate Dan.
Oh, okay.
Which is like this character has been around for like 80 years. And when they got in touch with me out of the blue asking if I'd draw something for them, I just thought, well, great, but am I a humor artist? And Desperate Dan is so far up my street, it's amazing. I've just had a ball doing it. So, so the Dandy annual that comes out, it might be this month. So I've got like 4 stories in there getting to draw this character I adored as a kid. So that's fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it's good to hear that in amongst the whole pandemic that's been going on worldwide, that you're still able to keep busy and find stuff to keep you going.
Oh, I have no illusions about it. I've lucked out, you know, and I know people have had problems with this, but I've managed to keep myself going, which is great. I mean, I've got a graphic novel which I've been working on for the last 10 years, which because of things having slowed down, I've actually got to sit down and work out the treatment for that. And fingers crossed, I've got a publisher that's sort of interested in it as like an elevator pitch.
Uh-huh.
So now I've got the treatment together. I'm going to sort of do some character designs for that and present it properly. And hopefully I'll get started on that in the next year. So it's going to be a big book. But whether people are going to be interested in it, I don't know, because it's things I like. Uh-huh. They're not sort of necessary mainstream stuff. So
yeah.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah. Last question for you. You're a big Star Trek fan. Would you be interested in coming back and doing some more Star Trek comics at some point in time?
Oh, in a heartbeat. Yeah. I'd be right there. I mean, I would love to do a Pike's Enterprise story.
You know, that would be awesome.
I'd be in there. Absolutely. I love the way they upgraded the reality of the sets and everything, but it still felt like the real sets.
Uh-huh.
That for me would be wonderful. So any chance I get to do stuff like that, I'm there.
Well, Well, hopefully IDW is listening to this, and I'm sure they'll be doing a Pike miniseries at some point in time with that show coming out.
Yeah, that'll be absolutely wonderful. I'd be very, very happy.
Well, that would be awesome. Well, Mike Collins, thank you for joining me today, and I wish you the best of luck, and keep on working.
Yeah, my absolute pleasure, and stay safe, stay healthy.
Yes, you as well, sir.
Transfer of data is complete.
Many thanks to Mike Collins for joining me on this episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel. He's drawn an awful lot of comics over the years in various different genres and companies, and if you do a search for, easiest way, probably do a search on Google for Mike Collins, Doctor Who, or Mike Collins in Gambit, and you can find a big long list of all the stuff that he's done, as well as finding links to upcoming projects. So thank you, Mike, for joining me and talking to me about Star Trek today. And I hope you, the listener, enjoyed this podcast episode as much as I enjoyed making it. This is Jeremy Bement saying, until next time, live long and prosper. Thank you for downloading this episode of Star Trek Panel to Panel, the Internet's premier podcast about Star Trek comics. You can find us on Facebook at Star Trek Panel to Panel and on Twitter at Star Trek P2P, 2 being the number 2. You can always find Star Trek Panel to Panel wherever you get your favorite podcast, and can always find previous episodes on archive.org. Please let other Star Trek fans know about this podcast, and leave us a positive review on iTunes. Thank you for listening, and until next time, happy reading.